Let's return to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio, WCRN. Once again, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
Good morning, New England. You are tuned to All Politics is Local on WCRN 830. Learn more about the program at allpoliticsislocalma.com or join the conversation 508-871-7000. He's Terry Hendricks. I'm John Featherston. And we're picking back up on, they were such great guests at the bottom of the last hour. We asked them to stick around. They are the authors of Easy Money and the Great Ponzi Scheme, John Agustinelli and Chris Micho. Thanks, guys, for sticking around.
Actually, I have a question for you guys. How much money does my four-year-old granddaughter owe?
To the federal government.
That's a tricky question. So right now, with our current deficit, you can get this. I think the St. Louis Fed has these numbers. It's about $150,000 if they're going to be taxpayers.
Oh, well, she will be.
Okay, so it'll be about $150,000 right now. That's the current national debt.
Yeah, and she's 4 years old.
Right.
And so this is important, folks. Think about this.
But what we're not talking about, and the country's not having the discussion about, is the $100 trillion worth of unfunded liabilities that nobody's talking about.
Well, there's a whole bunch of those around for pensions. Mm-hmm. I assume that's what you're referencing.
Yeah, $200,000 fireman pensions in Orange County, California. Just was in the news last week.
Yeah. Yep.
And what are those towns going to do? They're just going to declare bankruptcy because they have no other choice.
Well, the problem with these unfunded pension plans is they're in your city and town, they're in your county, they're in your state, and they're in the federal government. They're everywhere. And, you know, the politicians have been extremely generous with these pensions as far as, you know, the time people work and how much they're paying out, and people are living longer. They made some crazy assumptions about the return on pension plans. It used to be 8%. Well, a lot of people haven't seen 8% returns in a long time. And think about, this is a bubble. If this bubble burst, the country is done. I'm not joking. It's done.
No, I couldn't agree with you more.
We were talking a little bit with the mics off, and current administration has their branding and their keywords. I've done a lot of work in my local political career with affordable housing. Just because you call something affordable doesn't necessarily mean it's affordable. And it also has its bad connotations and it has its good connotations. But affordable housing is, you know, housing that's supposed to be set aside for your local school teacher, your firefighter, your police officer, your government employee. But sometimes it's still not affordable. I mean, you can call it what you want, but if you can't make a $1,500 a month mortgage payment, it's not affordable. And if you can't pay it for 2 or 3 months, then all of a sudden you're way behind. Are these keywords that the government gets to make everybody think that there's not a problem here, kind of a smokescreen branding type issue?
Sure. As you know, giving other people's money away buys political votes.
Yes,
and so that's been going on for an awful long time in this country, and certainly it's in housing. So what happens are the proponents of risky housing loans. They call these mortgages affordable mortgages. They talk about the underserved. They talk about creditworthy borrowers, more accurate credit ratings. They talk about common sense loans. But when you analyze it and you look at a 580 credit score, which is what FHA will loan down to, really automatically, it's when you look at that, that's a subprime loan. The subprime loan, right, is in the 660. Anything under 660 really is considered by the industry subprime. So when you're going all the way down to 580 to make loans, that's a subprime loan. That's not affordable. That's not serving the underserved. As a matter of fact, one of the impetus for John and I writing this book is we were so upset by what we were seeing in the field, the destruction of people's lives by the loans that were really foisted on them, not by the banks. The banks just made the loans that the government pushed. And we got to see the aftermath of the real blood, sweat, and tears of what it cost families. And yet here we have the new Barney Frank as Liz Warren, and we have her out promoting the latest and greatest risky housing loans.
Well, it's interesting. I remember, when my daughter started at BU, and we're moving her into the dorm, and outside the dorms, there are these, people had set up the tables from the local banks, And they were literally almost handing out credit cards to these students like they were business cards. And my daughter actually, like a lot of kids, got in trouble with her credit card debt early in her college time. And, you know, we made a little deal there, and I bailed her out, and she paid me back, and it all worked. But this is going on in large scale. It's not a credit card. It's a $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 mortgage that you look at the credit history, which is what credit scores are about, and there's no way this is going to work. It's a disaster in the making. And it's not just a disaster for the banks, but it's a disaster for these people who lose their homes, lose their self-awareness, their self-thinking, their and it's just a terrible future for some people. And it has to change. Now, somebody, you know, the liberal is going to say, well, you're not going to let them have a home. Well, if they can't afford it, no. Rent an apartment, just can afford.
Can I just comment on that for 1 second? John alluded to this earlier. He said, you know, is this some sort of national plan?
Yes.
So I'd like to ask you gentlemen a question. Were your children in school taught anything about economics? Were they taught to balance a checkbook?
No.
Were they taught how to manage a credit card? Were they taught how much at $40,000 or $50,000 a year for college tuition that maybe they ought to make a wiser choice? Isn't that interesting?
Oh, Chris, you know, I love what you're saying. Because my kids learned about their feelings and which are important and stuff. But the educational system is not teaching these kids how to live in this modern world. You know, they're sheltering the kids. They're not exposing them to the real world. And they're almost saying, you know, hey, you're going to be living with your parents for years and years. I came from the generation, I'll never forget my father when I was 16. Hey, you got 2 years, buddy. Get your life together. Get your act together because you're out of here in 2 years. Can you imagine now doing that to your kids? It couldn't happen. You can't, you know, I mean. And I left home at 18, and I was allowed to come back on the holidays and stuff. But I mean, I had to grow up now. But I mean, I have a 17 and 18 year old kids now, and they're great kids, National Honor Society kids. They're not prepared to live in the real world too. These kids have no idea what they're getting themselves into, and it scares the living daylights out of me. But you know, let's turn it back to a positive step. If you're a hardworking person who pays your bills and does what you're supposed to do, is investing in a single family home still a good, wise investment?
Well, it can be. It really boils down to, and we alluded to this earlier, that if you're in the right life situation and you can afford the mortgage, you can buy in any environment because you'll be able to sustain the mortgage. The problem is the keeping up with the Joneses in purchasing more house than people can afford. And then when the market turns and there's negative equity, the statistics show us that the default rates soar. So as long as it's within people's where they can comfortably afford the mortgage, they can buy in any market.
Okay.
What are you seeing with the trends with new houses? I know 10, 15, 20 years ago, houses were getting bigger again. Everybody liked the open floor plan spaces. What are you seeing with new construction, new development? Are they going back to a smaller model? Or
we think so. Okay, so if you've noticed the statistics, new construction has not kept pace around the country, okay, as it typically has with a rebound cycle. So there are a couple of reasons for that, though, and what we think is a strict zoning around the country has added so much cost to land prices that it's still not affordable for builders to build because a lot of these guys have to have 2 to 3 years' worth of investment into a property, into the infrastructure. Before they can actually put a stick in the ground. So I think this last recession scared some people into either downsizing or buying a smaller home. I'm at an age where I actually bought a smaller home, 1,000 square feet less than what I was living. I had a McMansion, and I sold it, but maybe that's partly because of my age. But I think more and more people are considering that because we all don't need 3,500 square foot houses. And the only time will tell, but I think human nature has demonstrated before that with easy money, and it's easy money's coming, that the temptation's going to be and the marketing's going to be to buy bigger and better, bigger pools, you know, stuff that doesn't really add value.
Well, if you remember a few years ago, it was almost as easy as a phone call to get a home equity loan, and they'd loan you $50,000, and people were all right. They'd go out and buy a Mercedes and take a vacation, and all of a sudden they owe $50,000 as part of their mortgage payment, in one sense. And even though the rates were okay, and the money was quick and easy, but a lot of people got in trouble with home equity loans, thinking it's, hey, it's okay.
And to use your house as a credit card, to me, it just makes no sense.
Well, there's this whole thing I learned a long time ago in, you know, in some class I took, economics or whatever, or common sense, that, you know, you finance long-term things with long-term debt and short-life things with short-term debt. And so you buy a car on a three-year, maybe a four-year car loan, a house that's, you know, with you for 20 and 30 years, you finance it for 20 or 30 years.
Car loans are now being offered in 84 months.
That's 7 years to you guys who can't count.
Yeah, and that's it's just crazy. Hey, we're talking to John and Chris, the authors of Easy Money and the Great Ponzi Scheme. We're going to take a quick break. You're tuned to All Politics is Local, and we'll be back.